Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 349 of the Roguecast, recorded September 28th, 2021, with next Billy Joel. Welcome to the final Roguecast of September 2021.
You scared me, Randy. I was like, the final Roguecast.
That's right. That's it. It's over. Call it off. I
thought you were about to pull out a gun or something. It's going to get dark here.
That's right. It's the last days in the bunker.
You know, by the way, I was hoping it would be cooler by now. And yeah. I wanted to get one day that was at least in the 70s. I get it at night. It hasn't happened during the day. I'm so very sad.
But you
get rain tomorrow.
I do.
I can watch it destroy Randy's
spirit.
Over 80 degrees and no rain ever.
I mean, your bet is going to be come through more often than mine, Randy.
Well, how about this? Rain for the next 5 days.
No, I hate that. I am not, for the record, a lizard, although I do see their point.
If you're not a lizard, then why are you inflating your throat sac presently?
You know what? That's racist.
I don't even know what happened here. We should talk about store stuff.
Oh, store stuff. You mean like Free RPG Day that's happening in a couple weeks?
Oh, is that happening?
Yeah. And here's the thing I just discovered. Renegade is going to have their rule book for a little rules freebie thing for the new thing that's got G.I. Joe, Power Rangers, and Transformers in it.
Very cool. Dope.
So I'm kind of excited about that. Mm. For those who don't know, Free RPG Day is a thing once a year where basically a lot of the companies we buy sort of these, like 32-page,
like an allotment,
booklets.
Yeah, an allotment of different games. Each is kind of like Free Comic Day, but it's much smaller scale. But yeah,
although
like
they've scaled up a little bit. They've got, I mean, there's always D&D. I think there's always
D&D.
Every company tends to, you know, any sort of notable company or most of them will put out some either like starter pack for their games,
yep.
A little adventure.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a few things like dice and other things to hand out.
But usually
Pathfinder always did like a goblin.
Goblin
does goblins and Starfighter does Skitterman.
And some of these are smaller, more indie stuff, but some of them have like the full production values you would expect from, say, a Pathfinder thing. There's like paintings and stuff in it.
A lot of them are really nice. So it's basically like it'll be a slick, like 32-page book, like an old module that you used to buy in the 80s, you know? It's like, and it has the rules. A quick start book. It's like a good way to play a game if you want to try it out before you buy it.
And what do we usually hand out, like two or three per person?
Yeah, usually two or three
like
per
that?
Person.
It kind of depends on how much stuff we get.
Last year had Root, the RPG, which, by the way, still has not come out.
Oh, wow. That is the industry we're in. Everything's a little weird.
But yeah, I was looking to see what this year's, if they have the offerings listed yet. So Paizo is in there. They have the Starfinder 4. And versus the Hardlight Harlequin.
Okay.
And the Pathfinder book is called Threshold of Knowledge. So no goblins this
interesting.
Year.
Interesting.
Okay. Well, Starfinder came around and changed it up a little bit.
WizKids will have a couple of their Frameworks minis. Probably won't be a lot of those, but that's their new minis line.
Actually, I just remembered, by the way, the Starfinder one they did in a previous year was the one that had, there's an alien race that's basically the race from Lilo and Stitch. Whatever
yes, that's
Stitch
the
Skittermanders.
Skittermanders,
yeah. And you basically played as a crew of Skittermanders.
Yeah, which was pretty awesome. Yeah.
The Frameworks thing, that's really cool. I didn't know they were going to do that.
So there's a thing called We All Wear Masks, which is an RPG from 9th level. So
sounds like an indie game.
Yeah, it does. It sounds like an indie game. And then looking at what else, there's Renegade. I see that Goodman Games, the people who do like... Dungeon Crawl Classics.
Mm-hmm.
They will have a game out.
Yeah, those guys are always represented.
Modiphius will have an Octung Cthulhu, a Dune, and a Star Trek Adventures.
Wow, that's pretty notable.
So all possibilities there. Hit Point Press has a Humblewood Adventure, which is the...
That's the little D&D with like, forest creatures.
Yeah.
You can play, like, as, like, otters and badgers and
didn't
stuff.
Didn't we sell, like, a million copies of the base,
there's Magpie Games has their second year of Root, so that'll be a new Root adventure. And
you get enough of the Free RPG Day versions of Root, you will eventually have all the core books.
Yes, it's true. The Iron Kingdoms from Pathfinder's Privateer Press, you know,
oh,
like
yeah.
the steam powered mechs. I can't remember what that game's called.
Oh.
But they have that as making a return. So,
okay.
Yeah. So lots of games. That's partly all of it. There's all kinds of other new games. I'm looking at different. There's a Talisman RPG. There's all kinds of stuff coming out. So yeah, come out, give it a look, and that's in a few weeks.
And get some goodies.
We'll talk about it more in the podcast to come. And then of course, next pre-release for Magic, Innistrad Crimson Vow, will be in November. That is the vampire focus set. The Innistrad Midnight Hunt came out this week.
Yep.
And did pretty well. Seems like people got some interest.
I'm waiting for the Mothman one, though.
Mothman will have his day.
There is a Mothman in a trailer we're going to talk about.
That's true.
That's true.
Well, let's talk about trailers. Let's talk first about the Cowboy Bebop intro they released.
It was a very smart play on their part.
It was, because everybody's skeptical of, like, I mean, their Death Note adaptation was not great, I think.
They're skeptical of live-action anime.
And they should be.
They should, because they haven't done a good one.
Is this like video games? Have they ever done a good one? Is there one exception that proves the rule, or...
For anime, I don't think...
Not that I've heard of, although I think there might be, like, one or two that are like, oh, I kind of liked it, or it was okay, but I can't think of anything, like...
Well, the Ghost in the Shell was famously pretty bad.
Did they... Attack on Titan?
They're working on one, I think. Nick, there's the one that you like Robert Rodriguez directed. Battle Angel Alita.
Oh, yeah, I guess there is that one, and I wouldn't call it amazing, but there was...
Like Mortal Kombat, it is the height of that particular genre.
It might be, actually. There's some good effects in there, and even though there was some Uncanny Valley with the main character, it was well done.
But Cowboy Bebop, the intro, first of all, John Cho is great, and him as Spike is fantastic. The look of it is great.
It's basically formatted, if I'm not mistaken, completely on the original animated opening.
It's got the same... In fact, the guy who did the music is doing more music for it.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty notable. The music is a big thing.
Well, they also got the original creator to come back and help showrun or write stuff for, so...
And that makes a big difference.
But I did hear that this is going to be divergent of the...
Yeah, they said it's not going to retell. I think they said they're not going to retell the same story or whatever.
I would expect that. I mean, there's been, 20, 30 years in the process?
But, I mean, they are still using the characters. I mean, Vicious is still in there. He's in the trailer.
Yeah.
And a couple of other people that were pretty much series regulars.
But it's a really fun intro.
Oh, it's great.
And it looks really good.
It had me, I think I heard you say that you want to go back and watch the anime, and I'm like, I kind of do too.
Yeah. Also, that the theme song for Cowboy Bebop is super catchy. Like, it's in my head.
It's like this super high-octane jazz score.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't see it myself, but I saw that they said Ayn was in the trailer somewhere.
Ayn is in the trailer, yes.
Yeah, I missed it. I guess
just for a second.
Yeah, I need to see it again.
I didn't see Ed, did you?
No, I did not see Ed. No,
who's Ed?
It's one of the main protagonists.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, she's like a...
tomboy.
Yeah. Computer hacker.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting. I wonder if they're setting up like does that match up with the original opening sequence? Is she not featured?
I don't know. Actually.
No, I'm pretty sure she's in there.
Huh. Yeah. I wonder if they're kind of waiting to reveal some of the stuff for second big trailer.
I think in the animation it didn't show up until the third episode.
And I do wonder if they will make it non-binary or something.
I hope so. I think that would make more sense.
Yeah.
I actually just want to get more Jet backstory. I always like Jet. He was cool.
Jet's cool. I'm very psyched for this.
I'm more psyched than I should be.
Yeah. Your expectations are a bad thing.
Yeah, expectations
that's
are
fair.
Bad.
That's fair.
I don't know if I will watch it or the original, but I might. I would probably watch the original anime first.
Yeah. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere. Is it streaming on
I have no idea.
I'm quite sure I can turn it up or have a friend who has it or something.
I have a Blu-ray set.
I have a Blu-ray set of it as well.
Exactly.
There's two Blu-ray sets in this room. I mean, they're not here right now.
Kaylee bought it for me for Christmas one year, and she's like, I bought you that thing, Cowboy something.
I don't know that I've unwrapped my Blu-rays.
Oh.
Because I had a DVD set I watched, and then I got the Blu-rays. I think I might have watched an episode.
Randy suffocated them.
I did. But, speaking of anticipation,
but they're into the choke play.
Netflix released a few big trailers. They had some kind of
It was like their event kind of shareholder event where they're showing all their upcoming releases.
So Stranger Things 4 got a trailer.
Yeah,
which deals with maybe a haunted house.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised at how non Stranger Things-y it felt.
Well, whole half of the trailer shows like this family and like a mansion kind of thing, living out their life. They look like a Adam's Family,
Yeah,
which is a kind of kids wearing suits and stuff, I think, and, you know, very proper sort of vibe.
As all children should.
I think, yes. Well disciplined, I'm sure.
Yes, and seen and not heard.
And I can't remember if they, like, taper off that portion by showing something, does something bad happen to them, or maybe there's screams.
I think it goes into the Upside Down. And then you get sort of like the weirdness, and then they flip back, and
like the door opens, and like the kids are in the house like decades later investigating it.
It's
like
hilarious.
Almost Scooby Doo like.
And they're Ghostbusters.
He puts down the little pack, and there's a Ghostbusters pin, which is a nice nod, and also hilarious that Finn Wolfhard is now in
actual Ghostbusters.
This is kind of neat.
But yeah, of course that ties in because the kids dressed as Ghostbusters for Halloween.
So yeah, it looks fun. And I like that it's a mood trailer. Like, it doesn't give away a lot of what the story is.
Yep. The biggest thing since their first teaser showed was Sheriff Hopper imprisoned in Russia. I was like, where the F is the sheriff?
He is a ghost.
But but I guess we gotta...
Damn, you look good. Sorry. There's an ad on this page.
Son of a
for news
fuck.
I was getting, yes.
Are we still recording? Or
we're
we
still
gonna
recording.
Take it out?
Yeah. All right. No, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Right.
This is real life.
Everybody got a little bonus.
What was I saying?
About David Harbour.
Oh, yeah.
Russia.
I kind of wish he had been there. But this was a very focused trailer. I am sure there will be another trailer out there that will have him in it. But honestly, I'm at this point, I'm in the tank forum. I'll watch it. And I probably will try and avoid those trailers.
I'm happy to see these kids again.
Yeah,
they're growing up, but I like them.
There was so little I don't even quite remember a ton from the trailer. I watched on my phone. I didn't see the Ghostbusters pin you are talking about.
Oh yeah, it's on the
back. He puts the backpack down. This is why David Lynch told you not to watch anything on your phone.
Yeah, and just in case anybody hasn't seen that, once again, just type in David Lynch and like movie or phone or iPhone or whatever, and just watch the YouTube video.
Dave, I just want people to think that David Lynch talks to you.
I mean, he does that too.
He's like following you around. Just put your phone down.
If only.
Is it David Lynch? No.
It is David Lynch.
Okay.
If only David Lynch secretly talked to me. It'd be like having Grant Morrison talk to me.
You should get him on the Star Trek podcast. He was on there. Or no.
That was David Cronenberg. They're not. All the indie directors are not the same, Nick.
All Daves are the same. David Lynch is in this room with us right now. It's just Dave.
It's just been miniaturized by PIM particles.
Listen, Club Dave is for Daves, not David Cronenberg or even David Lynch.
Interesting.
If he becomes Dave Lynch, we'll consider his membership.
I didn't know there was a schism in the David Dave Alliance.
There is not a schism. They've never been part of our world. No. But I'm looking forward to it. I don't love Stranger Things, but I like it quite a bit.
I love it.
All the seasons have been good. This seems like a neat idea. And you know, the kind of like what has happened to everyone is big on my list of just to see. I'm sure it's going to be weird to see them getting older.
Especially
if the pandemic required reshoots and stuff like that. I think it did.
I thought you were going to say the pandemic aged them in some way.
Well,
it did age all of us.
Yes.
It's like they're all 50-year-old smoking, chain-smoking guys now. The Witcher had a new trailer called Road to Season 2.
Yeah.
Nick, I believe, Dave, you and I watched maybe an episode or two of The Witcher?
I gave it a college try and watched like 3 to 5 episodes.
That is a fair try.
It's true.
And at some point I was like making dinner while I was doing it, and I realized I'm like, it's okay if I miss some scenes.
And you're more of a fantasy nerd than I am, and so you definitely...
I do like when people swing swords.
And the sword fight scene in the episode 1 is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I lost interest fast. Nick, you watched all the way through?
I did. I've watched it twice.
And I know Nick is not alone in this. That show had quite the following.
No, Nick's the only person who liked The Witcher.
They're making all of this Witcher product.
Just for Nick.
And I've played about maybe like 45 minutes of the video game, Witcher 3, and I was like, this is not for me.
but
I like
you
the...
You like all things Witcher TV.
I like the TV series, yes. I even watched the anime recently.
And what was the overall thoughts on the anime?
I liked it a lot. And it focuses on Geralt's, I guess, trainer, Vesemir.
Okay.
And yeah, I thought the anime was great. So good they're actually doing a sequel to it.
I have been wondering about Vesemir.
Yes.
We have to talk about Vesemir.
Well, I'll be mentioning his name one more time, because they actually do the live-action version of that character in the trailer, which was kind of fun.
Are they played by anybody notable?
No, nobody. I mean, they all kind of look like giant Russian kind of badasses, because that's what Witchers look like.
Yep.
But the trailer is... If you liked the first season, you're going to like what you see here.
Right. But there wasn't some moment where you're like, oh, this is the chapter where he becomes Dark Witcher.
And then the spaceship comes down.
No spaceships. There wasn't one of those things. There was a moment where he, uses his, Witcher power, to the point where he gets, these weird dark circles, almost very sinister looking under his eyes. He becomes pallid and...
I sort of feel that way when I don't get a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
I feel like you're like, Dave, you look very sinister looking. And I'm like, I'm just tired.
I feel like that way when people come into the store without a mask.
But it also looks like the season is going to be getting into more of him as a father, kind of, because he sort of adopted at the end of the first season.
The bard?
No, the little girl.
He adopted the bard. It's like his Robin.
He's like pushing around like in a Lone Wolf and Cub rickety baby carriage.
This is embarrassing. Let me out of this cart garage.
Shut up and sing a song.
Shut up and sing, baby man.
Nobody puts baby in a carriage.
No, the girl from the first season.
Yeah, I vaguely remember her.
It ends
she
up,
had like a separate storyline that what eventually intersected with him.
Yeah, she. It was a big thing, and there was a sort of time jump throughout the first season. At the end of it, it was revealed that a lot of the episodes were prior to, current events. But yeah, it's him as a father, sort of, does he actually, because she wants to train to become a Witcher, it looks like, and he has to sort of wrestle with that because...
Alright, it sounds like we're looking at a Wolverine X-23 situation.
Yeah, a little bit, and it also deals with him falling further in love with the woman Yennefer, which I... She's
with the
an
bard?
Awesome character. She is not, she's the witch.
With his baby bard? I remember that. They also, when I was watching it, had... I think only just met or something that.
She's a cool character. I thought they did a really good job of fleshing her out on the first season. So I think this looks good.
When is it coming?
It's
December, November, something.
I think it's December. I think it's December sometime. I think the effects look great. The action looks fun. I want more of this. So. Yay.
And then coming in a couple weeks, in mid-October, is Inside Job, which is the animated show from... Gravity Falls creator, Alex something? Let's say Alex Kurtzman.
I've seen precisely one Gravity Falls, and I thought it was quite good.
Yeah.
Not my thing, but it was
cute.
Good, clever and funny and all that stuff. And I kind of liked its aesthetic and all.
We have friends who adore it.
Many friends who adore it.
We had it on in the store the other day while I was kind of working around, and I heard that J.K. Simmons was one of the voices. Yeah. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
It's fun. I like
Jack
it.
Kirby
this,
Simmons.
This looks nothing like it.
This has swears and messed up kind of jokes in it.
This
but
looks
not,
more Rick and Morty, honestly.
Yeah. It's a story about who's the central character?
So the central character is the woman who's the HR rep or something, or she's high up inside the conspiracy place that runs all the conspiracies.
Yes,
right. The idea,
her
there's
father
this secret...
was the one who ran it, and now she's
Yes,
there's a secret underground thing that has literal sheeple that they're
literal
really,
sheeple. That was
the funniest joke in it. Some segment, some class or school teaching taught by a Mothman.
Mothman,
voiced by what.
Oh, I didn't get
Funches.
That was Ron Funches.
Ron Funches.
That's great, aka King Shark.
Anyway, I think Randy, you made a good point early on, which is in the era of QAnon and all these awful conspiracy theories, it's a really good time to have a wacky conspiracy theory show. And I think the answer is no. But was the trailer pretty good and funny? Yeah.
I gotta say, my initial reaction was negative when I heard about it, and I was like, I'm not putting this on my list of TV to watch. Having watched the trailer, I'm like, I'll give this an episode to see if it can win me over, because it's pretty fun.
I'm trying
to
figure out...
Are you more or less likely to watch this or Hitmonkey?
This.
I think they will...
I'll watch this twice before I watch it.
I don't think it is exactly going to overtly condemn conspiracy theories. I think their goal, which may have zero effect,
is to
just lampoon all of them and make it QAnon is as goofy as Bigfoot and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll work. I think that would be probably part of the plan if they do it.
Sure.
But
aren't they also... Didn't Department of Truth get optioned at some point. Yeah, so we're going to get this.
We are getting conspiracy stuff
we're
now.
We're going to get the era of conspiracy, yeah, which is not the greatest, but.
Yeah. The other thing we saw, this is not Netflix, this is Disney Plus. Welcome to Earth.
Who don't know it, the phrase made famous by Will Smith right before he punched an alien in Independence Day.
Yep. Like, I'm glad you said in Independence Day, and not like at the Oscars. Welcome to Earth. Give him best actor.
He had a psychotic break at the Oscars.
So it wasn't actually an alien, it was a presenter.
Yeah, do you think Disney named us? Or
that was Jack Palance, and now he's no longer living.
Or do you think Will Smith was like, it has to be called Us?
I feel like it had to have been pitched to him like this, or like, we'll call it Welcome to Earth. He's like, okay. Because this is a weird, he's like, the pitch is that basically Will Smith is like, I haven't traveled a lot. And I want to do all these things. So he's going to go like in a, like caving.
He's partnered, with like expert cavers, like, scuba divers, hikers, and all this.
Explore the world.
And this is directed, loosely directed, I guess. However you do, like,
or like, is it like produced or
no? It's directed. Darren Aronofsky.
Darren Aronofsky.
I wonder if Darren
of The Fountain and
he's going to end up a junkie at the end.
Here's what I thought. Here's what I think happened. Darren Aronofsky and Will Smith dared each other as rich guys to go camping together.
And have they done a movie together?
I don't have any idea.
I think they have.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Did Darren Aronofsky direct Men in Black 2?
Maybe. No. That was still Sonic.
Wild Wild West? Was that him?
He needs to do one of his movies like Black Swan or The Wrestler or was it Requiem for a Dream with Will Smith so Will Smith can do a grim rap for it.
Yes.
But still catchy.
Yeah.
Just call it the grim rap.
Yeah. The Requiem for a Dream rap is pretty savage. but anyway, this was
a good trailer.
It looks kind of fun. And it's gorgeous.
In the same way that Will Smith is always the nicest, very funniest likeable guy in the room, he is here. There's a bit where they're about to do like some like volcano diving or something, and he's like, we got to put our helmets on now, and they're cutting to shots of like lava spewing out of the volcano. He's like that's gonna stop those flying rocks.
Yeah, and the guy who's driving around is like, I'm 99% sure you're not gonna die. It's pretty funny. It looks fun, and it looks pretty, just like all the sort of Earth documentaries that Disney Plus has done.
But
so.
With Will Smith, who's charismatic and can sell the hell out of stuff.
I might watch this.
Yeah, it's possible. We'll watch him get scared trying to do stuff, or not get scared, I don't know.
So, this wasn't actually in our official news, but probably should be.
Going off the grid.
I am. Netflix had their big thing, but I forgot D&D also did their thing.
Oh, like a little con
like
sort
what was
going
to come up.
Yeah.
And they announced like some of the stuff for next year. So, one of them is the Rules Expansion Gift Set, which is a big like slipcase thing coming out in January that's got new edition covers, like these really swanky looking white covers with just one piece of art for Tasha's Cauldron of Everything and Xanatar's Guide to Everything, and then the new book Monsters of the Multiverse, which is another monster manual that I think is being released individually in February. So basically you can get a month long jump on it if you buy it in this gift set.
Oh, interesting.
I wish it was coming out for Christmas. I think that's a weird misstep for them.
Is this the Mordenkainen thing, or is that a different thing?
That's a different thing. I don't know what Mordenkainen is.
Oh, I thought they were doing I thought I saw an ad for another Mordenkainen book.
It's possible. But this one, so that Monster Multiverses is in this set, and there's going to be a regular set that has all the regular covers, and then there's going to be one that's going to be the limited covers, which looks super cool. But they also, the big announcement is that they are planning to release new versions of the core rulebooks in 2024, which, by the way, that's basically 3 years away. I mean, I guess it's 2.5.
Yeah, but it's a ways.
But they said that it is not going to be a new edition. It is going to be a backwards compatible with the current books and is a new evolution of the game. So similar to like 3.5, or even remember 4th edition did the Essentials.
Oh, remember yeah, that? Yeah, that's
there,
right.
There seems to be a point about halfway between editions where they do a tweak.
A tweak, yeah.
And it's always like you can play the old stuff with it. It's like it's not a complete reinvention, which I think is cool.
Yeah, it may panic some people, but like this is standard operating procedure. I actually forget, when did 5th edition come out? Was like 5 years ago?
It's been a while.
2008?
That seems possible.
No.
I don't know. I'm gonna look it up. Let's see. D&D 5th edition.
I think it was like 12 or 14.
Right. Put your bets in.
I say it's no more than 8. I think it's like 6 years ago. So that's what I'm saying. So that would put it in, like,
is 2015.
Yeah, something like that.
Nick, your vote is?
And I actually think it could be less.
I'll say 2013.
2012.
Oh.
Using Price is Right rules, Nick wins.
That's true. That's fair. So it has been up and running in 2012, so like about 9 years?
9 years.
That's a good run. Good.
Yeah.
God, I can't believe it's been like almost a decade that it's been out.
Yeah.
And that has been a very successful D&D. Like,
the most successful we've ever seen.
Critical
with it. Oh, Adventure Zone?
It's spawned Adventure Zone. It's like gotten so many
we've ever seen. And notably, while 3.5 and 4 had their detractors, 4 had almost nothing but detractors. Not at our store, but everywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
Fifth edition, I rarely hear complaints about fifth edition now.
It did something that I didn't really see so much with the... I had a realization earlier that I have now been around working at this store for more D&D releases than I have not.
Yeah.
Not for, one and two, but for D&D 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
And I'm going to count 3.5 in there, too, as a separate one.
Yeah.
I have been there.
Well, third edition was... We were both working at Dragon Slayer when that came out. And 3.5 was while we were rogues, I'm pretty sure. Because I remember
that's right.
Remember the midnight release?
Yeah, and I remember having to go and, like, of course, carry all these tons and tons of books in the car books. So that, like, my shock absorbers were being destroyed by them.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is that I think in this edition, 5th edition more than any other, I saw attracting more young people.
Yeah.
More teenagers and stuff getting into it. Always super cool.
Yeah. Also, they announced that there's going to be two classic settings in 2022 and a third classic setting in 2023.
Oh.
They didn't say what. I mean...
With Fizban's Guide to Dragons a thing, Dragonlands seems at least a possibility.
It seems likely.
I would say somewhat high. The slightly weird thing about that is that although it's kind of known for sort of the epic stories in the books, it is not like a wildly, I think, creative setting. It is very much, you know, like another Greyhawk or Forgotten Realms as far as those places, with a little bit of, like, the cataclysm had happened, so there's big devastated areas of the world. It actually has, like, it kind of in general, it seems to have fewer D&D monsters and more draconians and dragon stuff.
Do you remember the Time of the Dragon box set where they revealed, like, the continent under the other side of the world?
No, I don't know about that.
That was for second edition.
There are different eras of it, too, right? Like, so there's, like, before the Cataclysm, and I think there's stuff that takes place after the main story of, like, the big heroes in the books.
So I think that they could definitely tweak it in the same way they did Forgotten Realms and to some extent Eberron and
make it. I think finding a way that is like a balance where it's like a really fun adventuring setting, maybe a little bit darker with a little bit more of a sense of like you can shape how the world changes.
Yeah.
Because I think that was one of the big things of the first one. You were going up against like Luke Skywalker type stuff, bring down an empire type of stuff.
Yeah.
I think if they kind of, you know, created some sort of new set, you know, new era or age for it, but with that kind of stuff going on, I think that's how I would do it. But what other settings?
Like, I don't know. What I mean, Spelljammer seems like an obvious one. They've that's got Birthright, which is their like it was their kings and castles, and they can definitely revamp to do.
I don't know much. When that was the second edition one.
Yep.
There's one called
Mistara that I don't remember much about.
There's always Dark Sun.
Dark Sun seems like an obvious one to go back to.
Last time they went back to that was fourth edition.
Have done. These basics of Eberron, like
there's an Eberron book that it's probably not Eberron, Forgotten Realms, Greyhawk.
I honestly think they should do a full on just Greyhawk book.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
I mean, that's kind of good for nostalgists, but isn't it like Greyhawk is kind of a somewhat realistic medieval setting, a little bit more
D&D.
So than say Forgotten Realms.
Yeah.
And I know a little bit about Greyhawk, but like I just don't know if there's that much that differentiates.
I mean, the thing about Greyhawk is that it's where Vecna and all that stuff comes
from.
Yeah,
that's true.
You could do some interesting stuff with it, but yeah, I don't
know.
Plus the Gord the Rogue. also, they are doing a book featuring Boo the miniature giant space hamster.
Yay!
And the Morden Canon thing is, it is actually is the multiverse of monsters.
Oh,
they went
okay.
for the full alliteration of Morden Canon's multiverse.
Okay, I see. Anyway, some exciting news for D&D coming up in the next couple of years. Does not seem to be losing any particular steam as they go along. This is the other big news. Babylon 5 is in development over at the CW, with JMS set to write the pilot and also showrun if it gets picked up.
Yeah, that's pretty notable. There's been talk for ages of a Babylon 5 relaunch of some sort, a re-envisionment. a movie series, or just like a movie.
I assume it was just talk. I assume no one was actually going to do it.
I did not think so either. So it's at the CW, which raised a few eyebrows. Like, oh, is this going to be some teen angst version of it?
Yeah, but while they do teen angst, they have done like...
Well, like Supernatural, right?
I mean, CW does good shows. I think that if you look at where the Babylon 5 was on like TNT and the like Action Pax network where it started. And, like that is no better than this. People being snobby about it don't remember where Babylon 5 came from.
I actually saw like Babylon 5, although it has like... sort of very serious themes. Uh-huh. Somebody said this, and like it's kind of true, that he was saying, I think the CW is a good fit for it.
It is.
Because they kind of have a little bit of camp built into their stuff, and Babylon 5 was a little campy. And, you know, that's a little bit of JMS's speed. He does do the serious stuff, and I don't know if he might lean harder into it, but...
Yeah. And if CW believes in it, they will definitely throw some money at it, because they were the people who did The 100, which was a pretty solid sci-fi show.
They've done some sci-fi stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd be happier if it was coming from, like, HBO Max, and I think we'd be in for something else.
What if it was produced by Amazon?
Less happy. Amazon makes boring shows.
Randy, do you want the highlight reel on these?
Let's see what JMS... Because once I read what JMS said on Twitter, I'm like even more on board.
Yeah, so I'm just gonna... He wrote a few paragraphs on it, and he just confirmed that it's definitely happening. It's in development for CW. He says that they're big fans and they're being super supportive. He's writing the pilot now. He'll be running the series. Let's see. But he said he definitely did not want to retread the same steps that he had before. He says he's done a lot of TV and movies since then, and he's going to try and bring his new stuff to the table. He's going to look at it. He said, if I were creating Babylon 5 today for the first time, knowing what I know as a writer, what would it look like? And what can he do with the technology and tools that we have now? He said, how can it be used to reflect the world the way in which we live and the questions we're asking and confronting every day? Fans regularly point out how prescient the show was and is of our current world. He's like, it would be fun to take a shot at looking further down the road. So he specifically mentions as like examples of what he wants to do is stuff essentially like what they have done with Westworld or Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, those are good touchdowns.
He says, where you take the original elements that are evergreens and put them in a blender with a ton of new challenging ideas to create something both fresh and familiar. I think that's all the big stuff.
That's all. I like the idea that he says, you know, yes, we're not going to go just because we correctly predicted Trump and the rise of the fascism.
Like an alt-right,
we're not going to do the same thing again. We're gonna look and see what do we think is going to happen next.
Right, and he kind of knows. He touches on. He's like, I can't tell like Jakar's story and all those other things when all those actors are gone.
Yeah,
that Babylon 5 has had a weirdly, sadly, high mortality rate, and so many of the best actors from it are gone.
And I think for all the people who are like, oh, why don't they just do a sequel? Because most of the actors are dead, and you don't want to recast everybody.
Yeah. And also, like, you don't want to do a sequel to something that has a, like, what, 20, 30-year-old starting point?
Yeah.
That, like, is going to be somewhat off-putting to some people because, like, oh, it's old CG and all that. It shouldn't be, but, like, it will be.
I have a friend who watched all of Babylon 5, and he was posting, and I thought he made a good point. He's like, all the people who are out there saying, well, I'm not going to watch this, and, like, it's not for you. It's for God. He says, for people like my daughter, who will, no matter how much I press, will never watch the original Babylon 5 because it looks dated.
Yeah.
But who might watch this?
That's true.
So... I happen to be in the rare cross section of like, yeah, I actually want to see the new version too. I don't, if it's no good, I've got the originals. I don't really care.
Yeah, it's kind of like a win-win in that sense. Yeah.
It's not taking away a sequel that was going to happen. There was never going
to
be a sequel.
I mean, I honestly, on a purely FX level, I would love to see the station re-envisioned with all the modern effects. It was always a great overall basic design. I want to see the Star Furies and like Minbari starships and all that stuff.
So Claudia Christian, who played Ivanova, did post about this.
She seemed to suggest she was going to have something to do with it.
She's like, I'm not going to play Ivanova. But she's like, I'm going to have some role. And I think that'll be kind of cool if they cast her in a... Kind of like what Battlestar Galactica did, where they cast Apollo as Richard Zarek.
Right,
Richard Zarek, but Tom Zarek.
Tom Zarek, yeah. I think that is a cool way to do it.
A few of those nods will be really cool if they do... Or are able to sneak in some original...
Yeah,
if
she's... Well,
they do that sometimes with, like, you know, superhero movies and stuff, where they'll bring in, like, you know, Linda Carter in Wonder Woman and all that kind of stuff.
If she's an admiral in Earth Force, or if she's somebody, some new character.
Right,
you know?
She could be the flight instructor or
something
like that.
Something cool like that.
Yep. I definitely wish it well. A big, huge Babylon 5 fan back in the day, and still, like, much love for it.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty excited about this. I, I'm hoping they can deliver, because I've always thought that Babylon 5, for all that I love it, it got short shrift by having the fourth season crunch and then a fifth season that basically they didn't need at that point. Yeah. And you can definitely tell that it, like, these days, like, they're going to get their full seasons. If he tells them to give them an ending, they'll get
an
ending.
And pleasantly, I think they will be, like, not too, like, it'll be a little bit easier in some ways for him, because you don't have to do the grind of, like, 24 episodes or whatever.
Yeah.
You can do, like, 8 or 13 or something reasonable.
Also, serialization is much more of a thing now, so it won't be quite as hard of a sell.
All but invented that.
Yeah, and we don't have to have all the one-off episodes like the Muay Thai or whatever with the...
That is honestly what I'll miss. I'll miss the weird asides.
The Star
because
Trek stuff
they flesh
it.
Out this. It kind of fleshes out the setting. You got to do like fun, like see what some, you know, it brought in other science fiction writers and stuff like that. I always liked seeing what they did. Honestly, even when it was campy. So, it's weird. I want it to be, use its time well, but I wouldn't mind, honestly, if they had, like, some weird little asides.
I don't think I need a full episode. If you want to do a runner of a C-plot in one of the episodes with the thing.
That kind of thing is sort of like how they perfected, you know, like, you look at sort of something like Game of Thrones, and it'd be pretty, it's pretty easy to point out, like, oh, this is when, what's the super tall lady?
Brienne of Tarth.
She and the prince guy who got his hand chopped off?
That says Jamie Lannister.
Jamie Lannister. There was a bit where they were like stuck in an arena.
Yep.
Right.
And there was
and,
a bear.
And yep. And like, but that was like, you know, a subplot that played out through like an episode or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could do it like that.
Yeah. I think the potential is there for this to be a, and I know this is heresy, a better version of Babylon 5.
I think that's possible. Babylon 5 does have its problems, and like, in a weird way, one of it was that like JMS, I think, vastly overworked. Like, wrote just everything, and it just kind of, I think, like, it unfortunately, it allowed, it's almost like Claremont's writing in the, like, sort of later days of the X-Men. It allowed, like, all the weaknesses kind of came to the fore, and the strength seemed to dip. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, just the longer it went on.
There's also plenty of possibility for it to fuck up entirely.
That's true. But he's also, like, he worked on Sense8 with the Wachowski sisters. Mm-hmm. And so he's been a little bit, like, more bleeding edge than you would think for a guy who's probably, what, 60s, 70s? I don't know.
At least 60s, maybe 70s.
But, you know, I respect for him for continuing to push boundaries. I hope he will continue to push boundaries.
Yeah, I'm excited about the possibilities. The other thing is kind of a weird one. Night Court is getting a sequel series.
Also for JMS.
that'd be weird. Also set on Babylon 5. So this is... Night Court was a series from the 80s, mostly.
It was a great series.
Funny show. And a showpiece for Harry Anderson, who was like a comedian magician kind of guy. Yep. Who would like guest star on Cheers back in the day, because kind of spoofing who he had been, which was kind of a flim flam artist, like a little bit of a short con guy.
Yep.
And then I remembered he would show up on David Letterman and stuff. I knew about him because my brother was like a sort of an amateur magician when he was a kid. And so Harry Anderson was a guy that kind of they knew about in those circles. And Night Court was his big chance to be to star as Judge Harry Stone.
Judge Harry Stone, who was like he was the friendly judge.
He was a friendly, kind of laid back judge. For like all the weirdo cases that happened during Night Court proceedings.
So Marky Post, who passed away this summer, was played public defender Christine Sullivan, who had sort of she and Harry had a
on again off again.
On again, off again.
Yeah.
The bailiffs were played by Marshall Warfield, Ray Roz, and Richard Mull as Bull.
Yep.
And then there was
very memorably Dan Larroquette.
John Larroquette.
John Larroquette.
Dan Fielding, the sleazy, sexist legal prosecutor.
Yes.
Who won several Emmys for playing that role, and who is returning for this series.
I think he won more than just a couple. I think he won like four. Was it four?
I thought it was on there somewhere, yeah. He won four Emmys.
So much so that he said, stop it. I think that is what he said.
He's going to play Dan. Now, we don't know in what capacity, but... The series is going to have Melissa Rauch from Big Bang Theory, which I've never seen.
Okay.
She's going to play Judge Abby Stone, the daughter of Harry.
Nice.
And I don't know how that's going to work with Dan. Maybe he's still working in the night court because he's too sexist to avoid anywhere else.
Or is he like an old family friend who advises her, yeah. you know? Every once in a while, night court would do one of those bits, sort of like a lot of comedies where there's a little bit more serious than other episodes. And, you know, Dan would show he'd have a heart or something like that.
I will say that, you know how a lot of like aging comedians and actors don't really, they lose it a little bit. John Larroquette is not.
I remember he was on West Wing, right?
Yeah, he was on West Wing.
I mean, he was on West Wing, but even there was a sitcom that he was on.
Yeah,
like,
the John Larroquette show.
Yeah. Was that... There was something where, like, a... It was recent.
He's been doing some sort of darker, edgier stuff, and it's all been really funny.
Yeah, he is on it.
Yeah.
And
so that's a good thing. Yeah. I am excited about this. I think it'll be good. All right, that is it for our news for the week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. Before we talk about comics for the week,
a slight addendum.
Yes. So I, in our chat that we have for our topics.
Yep.
Sometimes people get a little chatty, and
Rainey's looking at me while he says this. I don't know why.
I'm looking at not me. But
we can lose a topic when Rainey has to go through and compile them.
And we did this week, and it was kind of an important one. And that is that there was a teaser trailer for Sandman on Netflix.
Yeah. The streaming series. About adapting Neil Gaiman's Sandman, his famous 90s
and
comic.
Honestly, it was the best way to tease this show.
It's a really good tease.
Basically, the opening of the actual comic.
It's Roderick Burgess.
Yeah.
He's an analog to, like, Aleister Crowley.
Yeah.
Who has captured... He was trying to capture Death.
Yeah, he and his cult were like, we will capture Death and command... But they probably would have thought...
But they also say, like, there are, like, seven Endless...
Right, they name them
they
all.
They name the Endless, and they accidentally get Dream instead. And then they get Dream, like, glaring at them. And the guy... does a good job with the dream glare.
Yeah,
and they show him taking off the Sandman helmet.
Yep, which looks great.
And the actual bag of sand, and also the amulet.
Right, so we'll see, presumably, you know, that first season or first few episodes, I don't know how they'll do it, is essentially his hunt to return his, like, items of office or whatever that he
has.
That'll
be cool.
But it was a smart choice.
It's an iconic kind of scene from the comic, and yet it also gets to be mysterious. It also name-checks all the Endless, like we said.
It was really good. Burgess is played by...
what's his name?
Charles Dance, as Nick put it in the chat... Daddy Lannister.
I would have been like, Lannister got shot with a crossbow on the toilet.
Dave's all about context clues, and Nick's all about accidental BDSM.
Yes.
Wow. But he is a great casting choice for
amazing.
That guy is like very...
Yeah.
We showed up in the Godzilla movies and
As an eco-terrorist.
Elevated it even more, so.
Uh-huh. Elevated is a word.
Hey, Ron, those scenes for about 10 seconds and then it all came crashing back
Julia
to
was in Street Fighter.
Being a Godzilla movie. Yeah.
Anyway, Sandman trailer, yay.
Yes.
Right. All right, now the comics.
Now we're going to talk about comics for the week of September 29th, which is the final week of September. And
do you want to say what the big releases are?
Kind of notable, actually. Inferno number 1, which is sort of the wrap of...
Jonathan Hickman's X-Men.
Yeah, and it feels like... I mean, if you've not been reading all the X-Men books, this is the one to go back to, because this feels like an echo of House of X, Powers of X.
It is. It is completely...
They're very much dealing with the cool, like, the Sentinel Station.
Yeah.
And the...
Yeah, Orcus, you know, the weird organization composed of, like, AIM and...
And sort of the time battle between Destiny and Moira.
Yeah,
there's some interesting stuff
coming to destroy.
You're not talking about
everything.
Destiny, the concept. You're talking about literally the character Destiny, who's like Mystique's wife,
right?
Who back in Extreme X-Men, if people remember that, had diaries.
The Destiny Diaries. Yes, they didn't know what to do with that storyline, but they had it. So am I correct? By the way, Destiny could not. That you said they did not resurrect her, even though they have all that power, because her precognition abilities would have revealed all of these doom laden X-Men futures.
Also,
right?
Destiny hates Moira.
Why
and
she?
Moira
hate?
Hates Destiny.
Is it because Moira's all interdimensional hopping?
No, Destiny went out of her way and killed Moira, and basically, there's a long diatribe that in the Powers of X or House of X, whichever one, and it's kind of mirrored in this issue about sort of why that is.
They got beefs, okay.
Yeah, like I thought this was a good callback to the Hickman stuff, and it's
not the end. It's the beginning of the end.
It's the beginning of the end. This mini is going to wrap the whole thing. Which, by the way, what is that? 5-year run? 3-year run?
3-year run, I think.
That's about right.
But with so many titles, like it feels like so encompassing. Like I can't. It's almost hard for me to imagine it without Hickman now. Yeah. I might like it better, but like. I also don't know, like, if he's made so many changes, like, I can't like it, really.
I'll be curious to see what they do afterwards, because this does feel like a bookend.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting. One of the other big releases, Berserker Volume 1, that's the Keanu Reeves, Matt Kent, Ron Garney book from Boom, gets its first trade.
Yep.
We believe, if what we heard was true, that this morning on the Today Show, Keanu Reeves might have pimped this out.
Yeah, he's supposedly going to be on the Today Show talking this up. Also, number 5 comes out this week.
I would love to have Keanu Reeves on the side of comics and talking him up publicly and saying, go to your local comic shop. How cool would that be?
I thought you were going to say you want him on your shoulder like an angel, and then David Lynch would be the demon, and they would talk to you.
I want to be pimped out by Keanu Reeves.
This is a good price. It's $16.99. Yeah. It's
got all the covers, including all the extra printings and stuff.
Oh,
so
nice.
Yeah.
It's a big cover gallery at the back with a bunch of different artists. Dan Mora, Raphael Grandpa, J.G. Jones, like there's a lot of
those single issues are not really available anymore, right? Like
right.
If you want to get in on this, you need to go ahead and grab the.
But
collection.
There's a little John Wick flavor in here, but it is like mixed
an immortal warrior.
Yeah, John Wick by way of Old Guard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and it's just a really good book.
Yep, and issue like you said, issue 5 came out, so you can get this, you get the next single issue, and then you're basically caught up, and you can start picking them up single issue wise.
It's true.
One of the other big things is Teen Titans Beast Boy Loves Raven, which is the third part of the sort of YA
DC graphic novel line.
Yeah,
of which there's been a Raven focused one and a Beast Boy focused one, and this finally officially puts them together. I don't know if they were together somewhat in the other ones, but I get the impression flipping through this that they are meeting for the first time in it.
Yeah, and it's done by Cammy Garcia and Gabriel Piccolo. Fantastic artwork, as usual.
Now, you said it's a big thing, and I'm sure some people out there listening are going to be like, that's a big thing?
It is.
And the answer is yes. You might not see this.
Raina Telgemeier and Dogman are big things.
Right. You might not see this because you're not quite the target age demographic, but for a lot of teenagers, and I think veering a little into 20-somethings as well, these YA graphic novels that DC does that re-envision superheroes kind of like often it's sort of in their teens, sometimes rein in all the big superhero costume elements and they focus a lot more on relationships and family drama and like interpersonal stuff, have been really very big hits. We've sold tons and tons of the Beast Boy and Raven ones. Lots of kids who I think, you know, wanted to see, they grew up with the Teen Titans cartoon in the early 2000s. They saw that those characters, had a crush on each other or whatever. But, you know, that was about as far as TV went.
Well, DC smartly did the first chapter of this as a freebie for Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But, this gets to be the culmination of sort of what they couldn't do on, like, a cartoon and done, you know, in a kind of more, I don't know, thoughtful manner, you know, more serious way. What else we got, Randy?
So, we've been talking about Sandman. The long-awaited Lock and Key Sandman Helen Gone number 2 comes out this week, which is... they're set as 2 one-shots, so I think this is a sequel, but also a standalone?
Yeah, I was flipping through it. I didn't get a chance to read this one, but I saw a lot of, like... There's Lucian, and...
I see Lucifer's in there.
Yep.
The Demon... Joe Hill writes, Gabriel Rodriguez, so this is the Lock and Key art team. It's very pretty.
It is very pretty.
Just the other day, a customer was telling me, and I haven't been keeping up with these, but he said that he was, like, shocked at how well the Lock and Key setting and the Sandman setting blended together. Like, he said it was, like almost like they were made to work together. Yeah. And I thought that was pretty cool.
And if there hasn't been some talking back and forth between Neil Gaiman and Joe Hill, I would be shocked.
Yeah.
Also in the world of crossovers... DC Black Label has Batman versus Bigby. That's a Bigby from Fables.
Bigby Wolf, the Big Bad Wolf, a.k.a. the Sheriff of Fabletown.
So Fables creator Bill Willingham returns to write. It's got art by Brian Level, which is kind of...
It reminded me of Fables' art.
Yeah, it's very fable-y.
I think a lot of people these days know Bigby from Wolf Among Us, the popular Telltale game.
Yep. Yeah. But yeah, it's bringing a character from Fables who is... He's the Sheriff of Fables, so he's tracking down some...
He is a detective himself of sorts. You know, Peter, I'm something of a detective myself.
he's tracking down some renegade fables that are in Gotham. And he's going to run afoul of Batman.
And Batman's like, what you doing in my town? I'm going to punch you.
I bet they might fight and then team up.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know if that kind of thing's ever been done.
No, it's just Batman kicks his ass out of Gotham in issue one.
Get out.
End of story.
We got Deathstroke Inc., the newest Deathstroke book, in which he is working with Black Canary.
And he forms a team.
Yeah, well, he's working on behalf of this, like, sub-part of the superhero, not Aegis, but they're called Trust. But it's part of, like, DEO, the sort of
there's
super
sort of like a thing. Wheels within wheels, because yeah. Black Canary's there for reasons, and he's there for reasons,
yep.
And Toyman 2.0, I believe, is what they call
it, okay.
Is their gadget guy, and there's some fun ideas in
here. That's not a bad idea.
And they're after Hive, which is...
Yep.
Hive is interesting.
Yeah,
Hive is something I know from old Teen Titans, bad guys.
Yep.
They were
like
the Hydra of Teen Titans.
Yeah. This is written by Joshua Williamson, who is also doing the Robin book that has an issue this week that we all like.
Yep.
And Robin has Robin is the big fight issue that we've been waiting on. It was pretty fun. There is a Transformers Halloween special.
Oh, I missed this one.
I don't know if it's like haunted. I didn't get a chance to read this. I don't know. It looks like there's zombies.
It features the ghost of Starscream.
I have heard. Oh, is it the actual ghost of?
I thought it was.
I believe. I was under the impression when I was writing up the description that Starscream investigates some weird happening on like one of the moons of Cybertron or something.
True.
But I think it's not about him when he became a ghost.
Oh.
Although that does seem like an obvious thing.
Yeah,
it does.
But anyway.
Anyway, yeah, Transformers Halloween special.
Cool.
There's also Turbo Kid, Apple's Lost Adventure. I don't know if you guys remember, but. Turbo Kid was a thing that was like, it's a low-budget, post-apocalyptic kid who rides around on a tricycle, and it was like a YouTube short or something.
Yeah.
This is a post-apocalyptic, all in sort of red and sepia-toned, about Turbo Kid.
Yeah, you think you can watch it on like Hulu or Amazon Prime? I know it's streaming somewhere.
Yeah, it's an independent movie that came out in 2015 about a kid who lives in the post-apocalyptic future of 1997. So yeah, it's a love letter to 80s post-apocalypse.
That was the post-apocalypses of the 80s were the best. It's Escape from New York, Mad Max, and the weird dream sequences in Dreamscape.
So there's a new one of these graphic novels, one-shots that Aftershock does, called 10 Years to Death. It's written by Aaron Douglas, who played Chief on Battlestar Galactica.
Oh.
Drawn by Cliff
Chief
Richards.
Chief Tyrell?
Yeah. Drawn by Cliff Richards, who did some of the Buffy stuff for Dark Horse.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And I guess it says, inspired by a bone-chilling true story.
Oh, yeah, I heard. I was making a sign for this.
A newly hired prison guard, a notorious mass murderer, finally incarcerated for his crimes, and the death that binds them together. Aftershock's been doing some fun horror stuff, so this might be worth a look. And it's a cool format. The book I think we all really enjoyed this week is Superman, Son of Kal-El, number 3.
Yep.
It's another Tom Taylor outing.
Yep.
Yeah, we're like a broken record in our general favor for him, but...
it's a great issue.
Yeah, he's doing cool stuff that sets young Jonathan Kent apart from his dad, but, like...
In some pretty big ways.
Yeah, in some pretty big ways, but, like, what's cool is the kind of the supportiveness that Clark should have and exhibits completely. There's a great sequence in here because, you know, the whole premise of it is that Clark, they know that because of, like, Legion future stuff, that some point around now, Superman is going to disappear and never return again.
Right.
They will probably not actually do that in the comics.
You don't think they're writing Superman out forever?
But something's going to happen to him for a bit.
He's going
to
be gone for a little while.
He's going to be gone for a little while, and he's like talking to him, and he's like, Jonathan, he's like, whenever it happens, he's like, you've got to promise not to look for me. And he's like, I'm not going to make that promise.
Yeah.
I will. And he's like, would you make that promise? He's like, no, absolutely not. I'd search the end of the galaxy for you, basically.
What I love is John is not like, it's not like a mellow moment. Like, it's not like it's a sad moment.
Yeah.
John is like, laughs at him. He's like, I'm not making that promise.
Yeah, it's great. There's a ton of good scenes in here.
I particularly like the his friend meeting his family.
Oh yeah, there's some surprises in there, and I'm reminded. I guess I'd kind of forgotten because you know it's Bendis, but like Superman's identity, I guess, is out there.
Yeah.
Oh, I forget that too.
Because like people, he was like talking about like come meet my wife Lois to people,
right.
And then it's just people like know what the deal is.
You're right because he's talking about.
That's why
about
he had to have a
Clark.
Secret identity to go to school.
He's talking about Clark Kent. Oh, I totally missed that.
Yeah. What I guess, I can only assume that it went a little something like this, that, like, Lois isn't being targeted by a bunch of villains because they know that they're going to bring down Superman heat right. on yeah. it. I don't know if he, like, made an example of somebody, you know, it just shredded, just tore off the Toy Man's head.
He just lasers his head off, he's like, this is what you get.
but I guess they must be going with something like that.
But there is a nice twist at the end, too. We'll see yeah. how that yeah. continues.
Yep.
Yeah. New issues of Black Cat and Thor. Second issue of Superman 78. I think we alluded to that earlier. New issues of Image Books Crossover and Department of Truth. Miles Morales gets sort of a notable new costume, which really yep. kind of cool. This is also Miles Morales' 10th anniversary. So there's a lot of variant covers on a lot of Marvel books this month that are Miles Morales themed.
Yeah.
And they're all super cool. The one last month that was at Guardians, or last week that had Guardians... And Miles in, like, a spacesuit
mm-hmm.
was super cool. But it's, like, they all put Miles out, but Miles is with whoever's in the book. So, like,
yeah.
the Black Cat, this one has him teamed up with her, and he's, like, variants on his costume.
Midnight.
Yeah. It's very cool. Also, I guess probably worth mentioning, there's a kind of a notable Amazing Spider-Man issue this week.
There is.
Amazing Spider-Man number 74, which is the final issue of Nick Spencer's run. And they have been doing... They famously sort of undid the Sins Past, which was... Harry or Norman Osborn and Gwen having an affair.
Yep.
And Harry and kids. They undid that, which was really one of the worst things they've ever done.
Yeah.
And then they're teasing possibly undoing the Mephisto's.
He negated day. The marriage.
Yeah.
Their marriage as a price to save Aunt May
and,
or whatever.
And that is resolved in this issue. So.
Yeah. And we'll see what kind of repercussions that has.
And then next week starts the new, like, creative teams and
who's
stuff.
Who's the new creative team?
It's a variety of creative teams.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of actually how they kicked off way back when it was Dan Slott and yeah. Mark Waid and all those yeah. guys.
Also notable, we got new printings in for TMNT Last Runner number 1 and 2. So we now have 1, 2, 3, and 4. So if you want to catch up on that, we have all of it. And a couple trades. Image has a book called Ha Ha, Sad Clown Stories, which is from the, I think, the creators of Ice Cream Man. It's one of those writers. And it's basically a sort of a Twilight Zone-esque anthology, but all the stories are horror stories involving clowns. Horror or crime, I think. And then Volume 1 of The Good Asian, which is the sort of 1930s noir featuring an Asian detective in 1936 San Francisco. It's been really good, really nice art, and there's also a new issue this week, so if you want to pick it up, you can get the trade as the first four issues, and then the fifth issue is out, and you can just jump right on, just like a Berserker. I love when they do this stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anything else I missed?
I think that's everything for me.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about a bunch of TV. All right, we have sent Dave off to the hills to die.
Yeah.
And in his place stands Anna.
Yeah, Dave is dead in the hills.
Which hills? No, hills were deadly. I mean,
haven't you seen The Hills Have Eyes? The hills are very deadly.
Beverly Hills.
Also very deadly.
Maybe he's on a fun adventure with Axel Foley.
It's possible.
Or maybe he's dead.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's dead.
Tune in next week to find out. But we brought Anna in here for our pop culture lightning round because Nick and I watch a lot of TV.
We do.
And Anna watches some TV.
And I make snarky comments.
And so we're going to talk about some of the network pilots you watched on yep. Hulu. Or I watched on Hulu. You watch on actual TV like a backwards 70s dad.
Some I do and some I watch on Hulu because I hate with a fiery burning passion of all things commercials.
Yep.
Yeah. So...
That's fair.
But I do have a fast forward button, so I do yeah. that too.
And then we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff that's on various streaming networks.
Yeah.
So let's start with the network stuff. I will start by saying I watched the pilot for Ordinary Joe, which has James Wolk.
Yeah.
Who was in, I'm trying to think, was in Mad Men.
Yeah.
That sounds like a fake name.
It does.
James Wolk.
He's a handsome man. He's played a con man in there was a short lived show where he had two wives, one of whom was.
I remember this.
That was his first thing. And it was a big writer who did it, too. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
One of his wives was Mockingbird, a.k.a. I'm forgetting her name right now, which is crazy because I have the hugest crush on her.
Yep.
But I can't remember her name.
Was Mockingbird? What?
She played Mockingbird in Agents of
S.H.I.E.L.D. She was also in Friday Night
Lights. Adrian Plicky.
Isn't she also Dove on...
No, that's the other Friday Night Lights person.
Yes, yeah. That was the... yeah, she was the other college cheerleader.
What's her name? Ree something R, maybe? I don't know.
I forget.
Anyway, Minka Kelly.
Yeah.
I like that we've talked about, like, you're a... Right. 15-year-old show as opposed to Ordinary Joe, which obviously...
So Ordinary Joe, it's not a bad show. It's perfectly fine. The premise is this. It is college graduation, which they didn't bother doing age makeup or anything, so this 35-year-old guy is graduating college, and we're supposed to believe he's in his 20s, along with the woman who will be his wife in 10 years. So it's a little weird. Basically, the pitch is this. At his college graduation, he is faced with three choices. He meets this girl, and she's like, and he tells her, you know, he wants to be the next Billy Joel, and she's like, you should come out with me. And then his best friend, who's also best friend with benefits.
Wait, hang on, he wants to be the next Billy Joel?
I know, it's a little weird, because who wants to be the next Billy Joel in 1992?
Yeah, I was going to say, who's this show for?
Yeah, it's
like
it's a little
50
weird because,
year olds?
Because he's, I think that's probably
well,
true.
Well, it's network television.
He's a white guy, and he can't be like, I want to be the next Ja Rule, you know. He can't be like, I want to be the next, I'm trying to think, what,
he couldn't
I want to be the next Lizzo. It's not going to happen.
Like a cool white guy from the 90s?
Really, could he?
I mean, he could be like Kurt Cobain or something.
I think it's like the 2000s, so.
Oh, okay.
Because it's like 10 years later.
He could be Billy Joe Armstrong?
Oh, God, it's like 2012 when he comes up with this plan to be the next Billy Joel.
That's so much more embarrassing.
It's really bad. Anyway, he tells this girl this, and then his best friend with benefits... wants him to come meet her, come out with her family and go to, like, the island. It's all in New York, so it's, like, Long Island or something.
Uh-huh.
And then his uncle, basically his dad was a cop who got shot in the line of duty, and his uncle's a cop now, and his uncle wants him to go become a cop. And so there are three timelines that we follow, one of which he becomes the next Billy Joel and is married to this woman he meets at the graduation. One in which...
He's like a family man, right?
He's a family man, yeah, with his best friend with benefits.
Right.
And they have a son who's like in a wheelchair. And then the other one is he's a cop who saves this politician from an assassination attempt. And then he is not dating either of these women. But as the show goes on, in the world in which he's married to the cute girl... from the graduation, and he's this rock star. He has not been able to have kids. They've been trying. They're not having kids. And he finds out that his best friend with benefits was pregnant, and she had the baby when he goes to his reunion. And in fact, it is the kid who's in the wheelchair. It's the same kid, but it's from a different timeline. So basically, in this timeline, he finds out he had this kid after it's like 10 years later.
Uh-huh.
And then in the other one, we see that he and his wife are having trouble, and they're about to get divorced. And they both love the kid, and it's whether or not they're going to stay together. And he's a doctor. And then the other one...
Is there any timeline where this guy is, in fact, an average Joe? Or is he, like, exceptional in all of these timelines?
You know how they used to joke about you're either a doctor, a cop, or a lawyer?
Yeah.
They really kind of went, like, instead of making him a lawyer, he's a musician. But really, it is, like, in this show, he's either a doctor, a cop... Or a famous
musician. A fucking
musician.
Rock star.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be Ordinary Joe, it should be Exceptional Joe.
Exceptional Joe, which is not a saying.
No.
But anyway, and then in the
is
other
his
one,
name
it's
Joe?
Like, his name is Joe.
Ugh.
And he goes to his reunion, and he saved the politician, and his wife in one of these worlds works for the politician in all of them. So he meets this girl, and it's like, is he going to get together with the girl who he... is married to one world, or the girl he's married to in another world. And they're jumping between. I will say this. It's a potentially confusing premise, and they do a pretty good job of, like, you always know which world you're in.
It sounds really ambitious for, like,
it is.
Network television.
And that's the thing. I give them credit for ambition, and I give them credit for, like, the performances are solid. It looks good. I mean, network TV is expensive, and it looks expensive.
Yeah.
But I don't care about this premise at all.
Yeah.
And so I got to the end of it, and I'm like, that was a perfectly well-done pilot that I don't need to see any more of.
Yep.
But also, I will say that it is interesting that the first thing that he did was a show about a guy who had two wives, and then here we are again in a show about a guy who has two wives.
That's his thing.
That's his thing. He's two wives guy.
Actually, I think in Mad Men, he, like, conned an old woman, too, so he's
okay.
A bad guy.
He's, wow, stop cheating on women, man in Hollywood.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Nick, you watch a show called The Leap?
Yeah, The Leap is a Fox hour drama about kind of a reality television show, reality ballet dancing show. Which is,
you know,
weird.
But it's not a reality show itself.
No, it's a show about the reality show.
Which is
that
kind
sounds
of,
like a bit of a leap.
Which is kind of interesting because they really are making fun of the making of reality show.
Yeah.
And it's helmed by Scott Foley, which is a character actor that he's been in a bunch of small stuff.
I love that Whiskey Test Tango Foxtrot that they got canceled.
Yeah, that was a great show. He was also in the show Scandal. He's a solid actor.
Yeah.
And I was actually kind of surprised about the sincerity of the show because it's all about people finding second chances in this reality show that is really just about making fun of them in some ways, which sounds very trite, but the show is earnest and kind of has a really good message.
Huh.
And it focuses on a couple of people like you would imagine, and they're all good characters. They're all getting fleshed out. I care about them, and they did that in two episodes, and that was pretty solid.
Is anyone the next Billy Joel?
No, no one is the next Billy Joel.
That's probably for the best.
But I will continue to watch this one. I thought it had enough there.
Huh.
I don't know. It reminded me a little of the sincerity of that baseball show
that was on. That. Pitch?
Yeah, Pitch. It had that kind of character development.
I liked Pitch.
I liked Pitch, too.
I was kind of bummed when it got canceled.
Yeah, so I think this is like the dark horse for me for network television that I wasn't expecting.
The one that I think you and I both watched and liked is the new Wonder Years.
Oh, yeah.
So the Wonder Years originally was like a really beloved show.
Fred Savage.
Fred Savage. And this one is the same time period as 1966, 1964.
Yes.
I should know this, but I don't remember.
Yeah, especially with what happens
given with the timing of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is, but it focused on a black family in sort of the suburbs. And it is narrated by Don Cheadle.
Yep.
As opposed to, I don't remember who narrated Wonder Years.
Wasn't it Fred
Savage?
No, it wasn't Fred Savage. Yeah,
at that point. And it wasn't the guy who narrated Stand By Me.
No,
because I was thinking that. But it was somebody notable, and or maybe it wasn't. I don't know.
But this is Don Cheadle.
It's Don Cheadle narrating. The dad is played by Dulé Hill, and he's great.
He is
and
amazing.
I love him so much.
Yeah, he's playing a dad now. It's kind of fun.
Well, he's playing like a musician dad.
He's a musician dad. Yeah.
But he's not the next Billy Joel.
He's not the next Billy Joel.
His wife is a nurse practitioner or something like that.
Yes.
The narrator in the original Wonder Years was Daniel Stern.
Daniel Stern. Okay, Stern. I was thinking that he did Stand By Me, but that's somebody else.
That is somebody else.
But anyway, this is, it's basically, in the old one, it was like, he had a sister and a brother too, right?
Yes.
But in this one, they've definitely, like, his sister is like.
Well, he had an older brother. Fred Savage had an older brother.
And a younger sister.
And a younger sister. And so this one flipped.
Yeah. He's got a younger sister. Well, he's got both. They're older. And his younger sister is in with the Black Panthers.
Yep.
And they show a picture, like, she's doing a lot of, like, college. She's at college, and she's doing a lot of activism. But they show, he finds a picture that falls out of her book, and it's her with a shotgun.
Yeah. Oh, I love
so, like,
this.
They're going in.
Yeah.
And then his brother is in Vietnam. And because he's an African-American man in the 60s. And they're basically, his mom, like, says things about, like, you know, while he's away. And she's like, away is what she used to avoid saying Vietnam.
Yeah.
So, like, they're getting into politics time.
They
and the story is about, he's sort of this nerdy kid. And he decides he's going to be the great uniter because he's going to get his all-black baseball team to play his friend, who is Jewish, and play their white baseball team. And he's like, I'm going to be the great uniter. That's going to be my identity. And it's a sitcom.
It is.
But it's got some definite social commentary to it.
Not unlike The Wonder Years.
Yeah.
Like the original.
And then the baseball game takes place, and there's sort of a battle going on between the guy who's the coach of the baseball team,
and
who has a crush on Dulé Hill's wife.
Yep.
And the two of them are sort of getting into each other. They obviously had maybe a college thing or something.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell there's history between the two of them. And they're both, like, trying to coach the team at the same time, and it's pretty funny. But and this is a bit of a spoiler, but the big thing is that as the baseball game is, like, going on, and the coach and the dad are yelling at each other, and the wife is getting in, this white couple comes up and is like, hey, you know, we're really sorry you guys are so upset. And they're like, what are you talking about? And they're like, oh, you don't know. And Martin Luther King just got assassinated.
Oh, no.
And so they basically, and they show, like, what happened in the neighborhoods. And,
yeah.
Like, and basically that's going to be where it spins off, is, like, this is a big moment in civil rights history.
Yeah.
And they're going to be looking at it through the point of view of this, like, you know, young, not quite teenage boy.
He's, like, 12, 13. Yeah, somewhere in there.
And he's got a crush, so maybe there's Winnie Cooper.
Yep.
But it's really good. It's a really good pilot. I don't know how the show goes from here, but it's a good pilot.
Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's on ABC.
It sounds like it has a great cast, too.
Yeah, it does.
The kid actors are good.
Yeah, the kid actors are good, which is important.
I was going to say, and also hard to find.
Yeah.
So
not so hard. I've seen a lot more good kid actors lately.
Yeah, there must be like some sort of child farm out there in the world.
Disney
where they
probably owns it.
Yeah, the Disney child farm. Where they grew all the kids from Stranger Things.
All right, you guys were talking about Kate.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's great. She used to work here. I like her a lot.
I think mentioning the Netflix movie Kate starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Oh, we can talk about that too, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I still want to talk about Kate. I miss her a lot. No. I mean, I do, but no, I want to talk about the movie.
So you watched this before me. I watched it yesterday on a whim because I was just sitting around being a lazy bum.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this action movie starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Woody Harrelson, she'll entertain me.
Yeah.
And it did.
Coincidentally, I was also doing the same thing. It was a Monday night when I was supposed to go to sleep so that I could wake up and not be tired at work the next day. And I was like, you know what? I think I'll procrastinate by watching this movie that I just discovered right now. And honestly, I think it was kind of worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it follows sort of the normal tropes of assassin lady, best of there is, awesome, very John Wickish. But something happens to her, she gets poisoned, and she has to get revenge.
Yeah, and one of the things that I will say is, like, one of the things about, like, John Wick is, like, he's getting, like, shotgunned in the face and stuff, like, throughout this movie, and it never stops him. He's just sort of an unstoppable killing machine. But, like, there's maybe a point, like, maybe 40% of the way into this movie where Mary Elizabeth Winstead is just, like, dead on her feet.
Yeah.
Like, she can still fight barely, but, like, by the end of the movie, she's just sort of, like, a zombie limping through this sort of thriller. And it's, like, one of the more interesting twists to this, where the character sort of, like, goes from being the huge badass to, like, the person that they're kind of, like, protecting being the badass that they have to lean on.
Yeah.
It's that part of it, I think, is what really sets it apart from other movies of its type. Also, they made her just look really horrible for so much of the movie.
Exactly.
It really sold it.
Yeah, it felt very Bruce Willis a la Die Hard with a Vengeance, where it just, like, beat all to hell and bloody, and the radiation burns actually looked very real.
Very, very, like, grotesque almost at
But
parts.
The action was good.
Yeah.
I thought the chemistry with her and Woody Harrelson was good.
Yeah, they were great on screen.
And I actually thought, like, the Yakuza stuff was some... It all takes place in Tokyo and Osaka.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting locale and beautiful.
One of the other things that I will say that, like, sets this movie sort of in... I mean, it's, like, perfectly in my aesthetic wheelhouse, which is to say that it looks kind of like Blade Runner.
Yeah,
which
it's
is
very
to
neon.
Say, like, everything is, like, neon and it's all at night. And, like, there's this, like, really great scene where she, like, steals a car from some young punks, and it's, like, the interior of this car is, like, a neon sign outside of a bar, and it's just, like, blaring, like, J-pop, like, just this absolutely saccharine.
That's the one scene, like, I was a little thrown by, because it looks so CGI.
It does. It does
it
look,
looks
like,
so weird.
Really, really weird and out of place, but, like, that kind of made me like it.
Yeah.
It felt like a bit of, like, a... Like, they sort of just, like, decided to, like, change up the entire technique that they were shooting the movie with.
I think if you're wanting to waste 90 minutes, this is
a pretty
good
decent
way
waste
to do
90
it.
Minutes.
Yeah.
And I will say, like, as I was, like, as they were, like, rapidly approaching the end of the movie, I was like, oh god, they're not gonna stick the landing, they're not gonna stick the landing. And then, like, where the movie ended, I was like, oh wow, actually, I would be really, really satisfied if the movie just ended right there. But I'm fully expecting there to be, like, a little afterward. But no, there wasn't.
No,
just
it was
sort of like they ended it in a really weirdly satisfying note.
There's no post-credit scenes where Nick Fury shows up and asks her to join the Avengers.
Yeah, Nick Fury does not show up and ask her to join the Avengers. But she does become the next Billy Joel, which was super
weird.
That's weird,
yeah. The next Billy Joel in Japan? Yeah.
The next... Japanese
honestly,
Billy Joel.
If you show me a movie where Mary Elizabeth Winstead, ex-assassin, becomes the next Billy Joel in Japan, I'll watch that movie. I will absolutely watch that movie.
Yeah.
All right, we're running low on time, so I'm going to cut some stuff for next week, but I know that Anna wants to talk about Doom Patrol Season 3.
I will literally talk about Doom Patrol until I die. I love this show. I think it's the best thing on television. Good. I guess I'm dying in 10 minutes. No.
Just like Kate.
You've been poisoned? Yeah, I've been poisoned. But first, I thought you meant the Kate who used to work here, and I was like, oh my god, Kate, is she dying?
Kate's been poisoned. She is also an ex-assassin and an ex-Billy Joel.
Oh my god, Kate, you've lived such a life. If it was going to be any of our ex-staffers, I would have thought it was Julie who
Julie
would be
is definitely the
radiation
next Billy Joel.
Poisoned yeah. who would become the next Billy Joel. But no, Doom Patrol continues to be wonderful. The last season, I remember when we last talked about this, I was like real like about it because
didn't like the ending, right?
It ended in a really weird spot. Yep. And as it turns out, the reason it ended in a weird spot is because of COVID delays.
Yeah.
And they ended up sort of getting their production like lopped off. So the first episode of this season is actually like what would have been the finale of the previous season.
Oh, nice.
And then it sort of starts like the new season at episode 2.
Okay.
The ending to the season, it's interesting because as I was watching it, I was thinking, like, oh my god, like, all of my fears and qualms about the show, like, would have completely been assuaged. Like, it would have been a wonderful sort of capstone to that. And I almost wish that I had, like, rewatched everything leading up to it, because it felt a little weird watching it by itself. I won't lie about that. But, like, still, it was a great little start to the series, and it just continues to sort of, like, capture the weirdness mm-hmm. and the spirit of the comic while maintaining, like, being its own thing. And they've sort of, I won't say moved past a lot of the Morrison stuff, but while they're still operating with, like, the Morrison-era team and, like, concepts that were present in Morrison's run, they've started to pull things in from both, like, the new Young Animals stuff that Gerard Way wrote and, like, some of the stuff that followed Morrison, Rachel Pollack's run.
It's interesting. I wouldn't have expected that.
I wouldn't have either, but
and I know you love Rachel Pollack's run.
I do. It's my favorite, like, comic stuff. It's so good. So I've been watching it with my girlfriend, and it is now the thing that I most look forward to every week is watching the new episode of Doom Patrol.
Nice.
I cannot recommend it enough. And plus, for people who like Sandman, there's a fun little cameo from the Dead Boy Detectives.
Which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's delightful.
It's on my list. There was so much else to watch this week, which is why I didn't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Star Wars Visions, I watched Foundation, I watched all of Midnight Mass, which we're not going to have time to talk about this week. We'll talk about it next time. because maybe Dave will be able to catch up with us on some of it.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Alternatively, if Dave is dead, I'll watch it and then I can hang out.
What if Kate is dead from poisoning and Dave is dead?
Did Dave get poisoned too?
Dave has also been poisoned. Dave is also the next Billy Joel.
Oh no, Dave became Billy Joel and got assassinated?
That's what happens. You become Billy Joel, you get assassinated. Why do you think that guy has to be the next Billy Joel? He doesn't mean the next Billy Joel 70s musician.
Yeah,
you know, like James Bond is a title that they give to agents?
Billy Joel is a title
they give to white musicians who are popular. And when one is assassinated, a new Billy Joel must rise.
Oh, wow. This is such a mythos that
this
we've created.
This is so much better than the actual pilot of An Ordinary Joe.
Is it bad that when you originally said Billy Joel, my brain said Billy Idol? So I was thinking of Billy Idol.
This brings up Billy Joel, Billy Idol, and Billy Joel Armstrong, the notion of some kind of rock assassins.
I was going to say the Billy Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, the Billy Cinematic Universe.
Yeah,
I like rock assassins better.
Dave won't.
He doesn't do assassins.
Yeah.
Dave will not watch our next Billy Joel Cinematic Universe.
That's a shame.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.